Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome to the show. I'm so glad to have you wherever you are, whatever you are doing today, taking care of kids or getting ready for dinner or being in the carpool. You are welcome here. We're so glad to have you. And I think that we have got a really encouraging conversation in store today. Now, you know, I have shared my journey as a mom. I'm a mom of four. I'm learning. I'm a lot better mom now than I was then, but I still mess up regularly. And my guest today is going to talk all about this journey of being a mom. We are talking to Becky Keefe. She is the community and editorial manager for DaySpring's Encourage. That's a widely followed online community. Many of you probably follow it yourself. She's a resource creator for Christian women. She's a speaker. And what her book is that we're going to talk about today is called No Better Mom for the Job: Parenting with Confidence, Even When You Don't Feel Cut Out for It. And Becky, this is a message that I need and that I know that a lot of our listeners need. And so thank you so much for taking some time to talk with us about it today. We're so glad to have you here.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, tell us a little bit about your story. Just tell us who you are and how you came to be a mom and a mom who writes for other moms. What's your story, Becky?
Yeah, so I live in Southern California, and God gave me three spirited boys. Anyone else listening have spirited children?
Oh, yes. Yes, ma'am.
And he gave me those three boys in 3.5 years, which just rocked my world. And I just want to say those boys are now my youngest is about to turn 12 in a couple of weeks. So I have a 12-year-old, 13-year-old, and 15-year-old. But Jessica, when I was a mom in the thick of it with babies and toddlers and diapers and the whole thing, I found myself in a place where I loved being a mom, and yet I also felt so ill-equipped for the job. I felt overwhelmed by my inadequacy, overwhelmed by my loneliness, overwhelmed by my anger that I didn't even know that I had until I became a mom, all of these things. And so really, I've always, words have always been important to me. I've always been a writer, but once I kind of got through the thick of it, so to speak, enough to, you know, be sleeping at night and I just really had it on my heart to be like, I want to write the book that I wish that I would have had. The book that reminds me that I am not alone in my struggles, that God is always with me. A book that would be funny and relatable. And really, it's not just a book for moms with young kids, but it's really for all of us who have ever had that feeling of like, oh, there's another parent who could do a better job in my shoes, because that's how I felt. And ultimately, I tell the story of how God met me there.
Well, it was so relatable. And it was funny. I told you before we started, I was laughing out loud reading this thinking, yes, finally somebody is telling the truth of what we're doing in motherhood. And you know, Becky, I feel like there's so much shame involved in this. And I remember becoming a mother, and you and I shared a similar experience in both having a baby with colic. My first had absolutely terrible colic. And I was so ashamed because I thought clearly I wasn't doing something right. Now, I was very anxious, and I'm sure that that was impacting her. But I got to Becky where I wouldn't go anywhere. I wouldn't do anything. I was just trying to handle it on my own. I was walking back and forth with a stroller from the front door to the back door for like 9 hours a day, never taking a bath, never, you know, getting the right food to eat. I mean, it was really bad. And I remember one time having the courage to go out to a family baby shower. And of course, my baby was crying. And a well-meaning relative, like she takes my baby and she says, "Why is she crying?" And I just was like, I don't know. And she said, "Well, why don't you know? You're her mom. That's your job." And I have just never felt so broken in my life. And you share a similar story, Becky, at the time that you really lost it. Like, this was your moment. You can look back on it and you can laugh now. And I did laugh too, but you weren't laughing then. Will you share that moment? I think you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. And yes, we will laugh now, but I was not laughing then. So, yes, I was in that phase of saying what you were saying, like, what was it to take a shower? Did I remember how to brush my teeth? Like, I had, you know, I had three boys, three and under. And it was one of those days where I was like, same like you. I'm like, I didn't have plans to go out of my house, but I just was like, I just need the courage to feel like myself again. Like, I'm going to get dressed in like clean clothes and maybe something that doesn't have an elastic waistband. Like, who knows? But like, let me just try to like put myself together a little bit. So I feel like more than just, honestly, a butt wiper and a milk machine. Like, motherhood is so much more, but sometimes like that's how we can feel, right?
Yes.
And so you already said it. I'm just going to say it real. So I remember, you know, getting the 2-year-old and the 3-year-old, you know, set up on the living room rug with some trains and some blocks, and the baby was in his bouncy seat, and I'm like, I am going to get dressed. And yeah, I was like in that like awkward postpartum where like nothing fits, nothing feels, like maternity clothes are too big and regular clothes are too small, and I probably tried on a million things and finally, you know, found something that I felt comfortable and like me in. And about that time, I realized that all of like the train crashing and the block stacking noises had stopped.
Always a bad sign.
Right. I'm like, I'm an introvert. I love quiet. But when you have kids, sometimes quiet is not a good sign. So the baby's all strapped into the bouncy seat, and I go out, and my toddlers are no longer on the rug. And I'm like, boys. And I hear this giggling. And so I walk into the dining room and I see these little toes sticking out from under the table. And I'm like, guys, what you doing? And I hear these little voices say, nothing. I should have known, Dr. Jessica. And so I peer under that table, and there between my two toddlers is an entire carton of eggs that has been taken out of that carton and smashed into the rug. And there is egg goop dripping down their little arms. And I lose it. I lose my mind. And I grab those children and I pull them out and I drag them into the bathroom and I put them in the bathtub. No bath toys, of course.
Of course.
And it's not, mind you, it is, I don't even think it's 8 a.m. This is like early morning, because they were also like in like the 5 a.m. is an acceptable time to wake up. So we've been awake for hours, but it's still morning. And, you know, and at this point they're crying and I'm crying. And then I look in the mirror and I see on my freshly chosen outfit, egg goop just smeared across my front. And again, I lose it. And in the book, I talk about how that was one of my monster mommy moments. Aww. Where I just became undone. Because at the moment, there was nothing comical about it. I'm just thinking about the food wasted and the rug ruined and, you know, kids who, you know that they're not supposed to go in the fridge without permission and all the things. It just feels overwhelming and out of control. And I felt overwhelmed and I was out of control. And earlier you used the word shame. And that's really what blanketed a lot of my early mothering, was just this blanket of shame over not being able to respond or react the way that I wanted to, not being able to get my kids to behave the way I wanted them to, and really just feeling like a mess. Like, we were just a bunch of cracked eggs who couldn't get together.
Well, you know, that story is so relatable, Becky, and you share multiple anecdotes like that throughout that really are representative of the real moments of motherhood. And some of the dads out there listening may be like, oh, gosh, that is somewhat uncomfortable. You should go right now and thank the mother of your children for dealing with a lot of those things that they deal with. But I think this sometimes can be hard for dads to understand because moms often undergo this, you know, really just such a big transformation, especially in those early days of parenting where you may, like you were sharing, you may have worked and then you're at home with the kids or, you know, you're used to being in a different role. And then all of a sudden, like you said, like you're just cleaning up messes all day long. And it does fuel this feeling of inadequacy, feeling like I am not enough. I am messing up my kid for life. Like how in the world am I going to get through this? How did you learn, Becky, to celebrate your strengths as a mom and to really believe that God created you specifically as the right mom for your specific child? How did you do that?
Yeah, well, good news and bad news. The good news is that I did do it. And today, like, not like parenting is, you know, easy breezy. I think that every season, whether you're parenting toddlers or teens now like I am, like every season has, you know, its challenges for sure. Also things that, you know, are worth celebrating. Absolutely. But if you actually speak directly to, if you are listening and you're like, oh my gosh, like I'm so overwhelmed. I feel so not cut out for this. I want you to know that there absolutely is hope. The thing that can feel maybe like not so good news is that there is not a magic pill or quick fix. Like it takes time, but there are really simple, practical things that you can start to do that I did that can move you from that place of overwhelm and inadequacy to really believing and embracing that you are the mom that God created you to be. And the very first thing that helped me with that was just recognizing that those internal tapes in my head that would say, like, you're not good enough, like, you're messing your kids up, this is too much for you, you don't have what it takes. Because I always felt like, especially with like my firstborn who was so spirited and like did not fit the mold of any other kid that we saw at the park or at library story time. Like he just, I would say marched to the beat of his own drummer, more like sprinted to the beat of his own drummer. But what I learned that if I constantly believed and told myself, okay, someone else, another mom would do a better job in my shoes. Then what I was really saying in essence was, God, I believe that you made a mistake in making me the mom of my kids.
That's tough.
And then I had to evaluate that belief. Do I really believe that God is a God who makes mistakes? Well, I don't. I don't believe that God makes mistakes. Okay, so if God doesn't make a mistake, then what does that mean for my motherhood? Do you see where this train of thought is going?
Mm-hmm.
So then I had to say, okay, if God doesn't make a mistake, then that means that he has created me to be the mom of my exact kids on purpose for a purpose. Then that means that when I feel inadequate, I'm not alone. He promises to never leave me or forsake me. That where he calls us, he equips us. Okay, so if I feel ill-equipped, then I need to ask God, would you show me? Would you teach me? They're learning to be kids. I'm learning to be a mom. It's okay that I don't have this all figured out. I can learn, and instead of feeling that burden to figure it out all on my own or turn to Instagram or something else, like I can first turn to the Lord and say, okay, would you teach me how to be the mom that my kids need for such a time as this? And part of that, you asked about celebrating my strengths. That's something I talk mm-hmm. about in No Better Mom for the Job, because I think as women especially, and dad, maybe you guys struggle with this too, but I know as women especially, we are so keenly aware of our weaknesses, right? We are, you know, if you ask a woman, hey, you know, what are five things you're not doing that great in life? She could rattle it off like no problem. But you ask a mom, what are five things you're doing really well? That's a really hard thing for a lot of women to answer. And so it's another thing about changing the script in our head. Instead of focusing on all the ways you blew it or all the things you wish you did differently or could do better, Instead, we have to start also training our minds to think, where am I winning? What am I doing well? And it can be something like really, really simple.
And those are questions I want you to answer right after the break, Becky. We are coming up on a break here, but we have a lot more to talk about. And when we come back, I want to talk about this anger. You talked about the anger you had. I have experienced that as a mom. Let's go there when we come back. Don't go away. We'll see you right after this break. Why is our society so ravenous to abort babies? According to a former Satanist, the demonic forces have a bloodlust for the innocents and sickly believe their blood sacrifice empowers evil. Make no mistake, we are fighting a spiritual battle as we protect the most innocent among us, babies in their mother's womb. Preborn stands on the front lines of this battle, and their network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas, often next to abortion mills where unspeakable evil takes place every day. Preborn offers God's love and life to protect hurting women and precious preborn babies. And every time a baby is saved, which happens 200 times a day, good conquers evil. Please make your most generous gift to empower good and rescue precious souls. For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound that doubles a baby's chance at life. To donate securely, dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
I love you, Lord. Oh, your mercy never fails me. All my days I've been held in your hands. From the moment that I wake up until I lay my head, oh, I will sing of the goodness of God.
Well, that is one of my favorite songs. That song is on repeat in my playlist over and over again. My kids know when that comes on, oh, better go get mama tissue. She's going to weep over the testimony that God has been so good and so faithful, even in the difficult moments of my life. And I have been pretty open in sharing that the early days of my mothering were just absolutely overpowered and overshadowed by anxiety, by insecurity, by just generational trauma. And Becky and I were talking during the break how we're so much better. Both of us are so much better, but we're still not perfect and we still struggle with these things. And it's not like those struggles go away. You just learn better coping skills. And what Becky was talking about right before the break is the most important thing, is depending on God, is recognizing that you're not enough, but God is enough. And He knows that He gifted you with that child for such a time as this. I just love that, Becky. And one thing that I think is really important, you know, there may be people listening out here who are not moms, or you're not moms in that difficult season, and you're thinking, okay, yeah, I remember that, but this doesn't relate to me. It does relate to you. Let me encourage you, those of you who are grandparents, those of you who just go to the grocery store and you're standing in an aisle and you see kids, or you're on an airplane and you see a mom with kids, it is so incredibly powerful. If you walk up to somebody, to a mom, you see even a mom who's struggling or a mom who's succeeding, and you just say, hey, you're a good mom. I really admire the way that you did this, or your kids are really well behaved, or just good job, keep it up. Oh my goodness, that has happened to me on a handful of occasions. And I hold those things very, very closely. And even now, Becky, you know, when my husband will look at me in the eyes and just say, you're such a good mom. Oh my goodness, I will melt like butter. I'm like, really? Because his words of affirmation mean so much to me. So I just want to give you a chance, Becky, to finish your thought on inadequacy. Any last words of encouragement for moms before we start talking about some anger that we struggle with?
That's such a good word. And just to add to that, you know, even if you see a mom who maybe things are not going well, or you mm-hmm. are not perhaps impressed with their parenting in public, one, just know parenting in public is so hard. But even if you just smile and say, I hope your day gets better, like even that would be such a gift, because we can feel so judged and shamed by others. And just to say like, hey, like you're doing a good job, or it's going to get better, or hey, I'm praying for you. Like just, I think something we can all do, no matter whether you're a parent or not, like we can be people who see one another. And I think when we feel seen and validated, it is something that helps chip away at that insecurity. So I love that encouragement.
I know. I think that's so important. And when we're parenting in public, Becky, it is a lot of times when our kids choose to do the worst things, right? Like they're going to have the worst temper tantrum meltdown because, like you said, you're not buying them the candy in the grocery store aisle or whatever it is, or your teenager decides to get sassy and have an argument right in front of everybody. And Becky, in those instances where our kids just kind of, we're overwhelmed, like a lot of times we may be sleep deprived, we may not have good nutrition, we may not be taking care of ourselves to begin with, doing the best that we can. But I think one of those emotions that comes up for us as parents a lot of times in those situations, and you say it this way, when the people you love the most bring out your worst, we feel this anger. And how do we deal with that? Where does that come from? And how have you learned to deal with it?
Yeah, well, like in my lovely egg story that we talked about before the break, I think a big part of it, anger comes from feeling out of control, feeling like we can't control our children. We maybe can't feel like we can't control ourselves. And I think that no other time, at least in my life, has that come to the forefront as in parenting. You know, it's like in three kids in my job or in my schooling or in friendships, like I do X, Y, Z and I'm going to get results, you know, X, Y, Z. And in parenting, it doesn't always work like that. And so I think just to recognize and just be able to call out like, okay, like I feel out of control. Instead of saying like, oh, I'm just so angry, to dial it back and be like, okay, well, why am I angry? Well, I'm angry because they're not listening. Okay. And what makes, how do I feel about them not listening? Well, I feel disrespected. Okay. Then why am I feeling disrespected? Well, because I feel like I can't control their behavior. A lot of it for me, at least, comes back to that issue of control. So I feel like that's one thing that's helpful. Another thing that's helpful is to normalize the fact that anger is an emotion. And of course, it's what we do with or in our anger that's important, but being angry in and of itself is not a bad thing. And so one thing that, again, taking out that shame piece of it, be like, instead of just being automatically judging myself for like, oh, I'm feeling out of control and therefore I'm feeling angry and I shouldn't feel angry, like that's not a helpful cycle. Instead of saying, I do feel angry, okay, I could lash out at my kids, or what other choice could I make? And so I got very comfortable at giving myself a mommy timeout, you know, going into the laundry room or going into the bathroom. And surely there'd be little fingers that would come sliding under the door. What are you doing in there, mommy? You know, or I'd go on the back porch. I remember one time going on the back porch and getting myself a granola bar and just sitting there. And sure enough, a couple minutes later, had little boys right next to me asking, what are you doing? And I was like, guys, mommy just needs a little break right now. And they just plopped right down like, great, I need a break too. And I was like, I actually need a break from you, but good. I'm so glad you also need a break. But I think just, you know, those little simple things of removing yourself from the situation, taking some deep breaths, and then when anger does lead to a poor reaction, acknowledging that not only to ourselves, not only to God, but also to our kids, to get comfortable apologizing. And I feel like that is one of like the main ways that God helped redeem my struggle with anger. Because when I was able to say to my kids, you know what? Mommy messed up. I'm really sorry I raised my voice. I should not have reacted like that. I see that that scared you or that hurt you, and I'm really sorry. Can you start over? Now, apologizing doesn't diminish the fact if there is a disciplinary issue that you have to deal with. But sometimes, like, our own anger and emotions overshadow whatever, you know, behavior we're trying to correct. And what I found was so beautiful that often when I got into that humble posture of apologizing, it often softened my child's heart. And then they said a genuine, "Mommy, I'm sorry too." As opposed to, like, you know, when you're just angry, you're like, "Say sorry to your brother for hitting him," you know, and they're like, "Sorry," you know, and it's like, that's not genuine. But like when they see that humility modeled, that's when I think heart change starts to happen for both parent and child.
I think that's so true. And, you know, you're talking about it in the younger ages of parenting, but this happens in teenager years and even parenting young adults and adult children, that, you know, you can have conflict. And a lot of times I feel like, you know, anger is one of our first responses. And sometimes we're not angry at our kids. We're just angry because we feel unwanted. We feel rejected. Mm. We feel like we're inadequate, you know, and that just makes us angry. You know, when our teens think they disrespect us, like you said, we feel rejected and we're just angry. And our kids don't differentiate, or we're angry also that something has come in to threaten our family security, you know, that there is a potential mm-hmm. threat here, a disruption to our relationship and conflict, and we have fear. And especially if we haven't dealt with our own unhealthy patterns of what we learned when we were growing up. I mean, I know that was, for me, that was really hard. Like, between me and my husband, we got married, like, he was from an Italian family. So there was going to be a lot of yelling and hand gestures during conversations. I came from a family that was like, "Oh no, we don't talk about this." And so when I even had that paradigm challenged, I would find myself just being angry. And I think what you're saying is really important, to make sure that we're modeling naming those emotions for our kids, saying, "You know what? I'm struggling a lot with anger right now. I need to take a time out. I need to take a minute. I need to calm down. Everything is okay. I love you. And I'll be back in a minute." If we could at least just have that much self-control. And honestly, Becky, what I found is that going, when I have those timeout periods, is just praying. Because it's really hard to be mad yep. at somebody you're praying for. So if you start praying for your kids, I mean, you might start off like, "God, I need you to help my child." You know, it may start off in that kind of tone, but it's really hard to be mad at somebody that you're praying for. But I think what you're saying, especially about apologizing, just modeling that, just, "I'm sorry that scared you. I'm sorry that, you know, that was tough. This is what I'm dealing with." Modeling those emotions is really, really important. And Becky, you talk in your book a lot about boundaries and putting up those boundaries. I think those are important to prevent the overwhelm that we often encounter that can lead to anger, when we just feel like sometimes it's just the straw that breaks the camel's back, right? Or just like it's the egg on the dining room carpet. Or in my case, it was the 100 paper plates put on the wall by gum. And you think, like, it's just a little thing, but it's been building and building. How did you learn to put healthy boundaries in place as a mom that are going to set you and your kids up for success?
Yeah, well, I think the first step to that was in part of, you know, in the same line of naming our emotions, but understanding how I'm wired and how my kids are wired. So I struggle with anxiety, and I think that anxiety can then be linked to irritability, and irritability can be linked to anger, and, you know, it can be this like vicious cycle. And so recognizing some of those tendencies, and instead of like getting to that breaking point, thinking, you know, okay, how can I do some things that are going to kind of like pre-take care of myself or pre-help my kids? So as my kids are older, I work from home, and my desk is like smack dab in the middle of our kitchen, which is not the most private place. And so oftentimes, like, they're coming or going, or just they're asking questions or getting snacks or things, it can be like overstimulating for my senses. And so I'll be able to say things like, "Hey guys, like, you're not doing anything wrong right now, but just so you know, like, my brain is on overload and I'm going to need you guys to stay out of this area for right now," or, "Hold your questions. I can give you my attention in 15 minutes," as opposed to, you know, just kind of, you know, barking at people here and there. because I'm feeling anxious and irritated and overwhelmed. Or when my kids were younger, I found myself often feeling out of control and angry at and frustrated with them when we would go to the park, for example, which seems like a simple thing that parents should be able to do. But as I mentioned, my children were spirited, and they were the kind of kids who climbed fences and sprinted into parking lots and ate wood chips and like all these kinds of things. And then I have three of them, and I'm like nursing a baby and trying to, and it just was chaos. And I realized, okay, I want to be able to take them outside. The park can be a good place. I also want to have play dates where I can connect with a friend. That's important too. So I put up a boundary of like, we're only going to go to fully fenced gated parks that I'm familiar with, because that was just enough of like, in this case, a physical boundary that kind of kept my kids in place a little bit, but also just kind of eased my anxiety. And so if a friend would say, hey, do you want to go, you know, such and such place? Well, that worked great for their child who, you know, was more mild-mannered and stayed right by their side. But for mine, you know, some sprawling venue was not going to set me and my child up for success.
And I think those boundaries are appropriate even in the teenage years, because sometimes you need some boundaries for self-care. And sometimes what I see today is that as moms, we are exhausting ourselves trying to be all things to all people. And we're trying to make sure that, you know, our kids have a nutritious lunch that's packed in a bento box, which, by the way, I never did that as a mom. But, you know, we are thinking about, okay, what about for college? What about for sports? What about the clothes that they need? What about the experiences that they need to have? How many AP classes do they have to be in? And we are not taking care of ourselves. And that's where, you know, we talk about self-care, which a lot of people can say, well, that's selfish. But we do need to honor our bodies as a temple of God. They're a temple of the Holy Spirit. And if we're not getting sleep, our emotions are magnified. I found that when I'm sleep deprived, I could be a little bit irritable, or I'm going to be really irritable, you know, or if I'm sleep deprived, if I'm a little anxious, my anxiety is going to be magnified. My feelings of being down are going to be magnified. And so sometimes I think we need to model that to our kids, just saying, hey, I need an hour to myself, whether that's going to be to take a walk or whether that's going to be to read my Bible, which you talk about that in your last chapter, which is such a hard truth. But it says the thing you really need more than caffeine and sleep, and that's fellowship with God. And that is so, so, so important to be in the Word, because we can't do this on our own, Becky. I mean, it really is, it's hard and it is overwhelming to be a parent in today's day and age. But I think just modeling some of those self-care, and sometimes parents are sensitive thinking, you know, I don't want my kid to know that I'm upset. I don't want them to know that I'm angry. Well, here's a news flash for you. They know. Their whole job for psychological security is to monitor your emotions and to be very in tune with where you are. So it's actually less anxiety producing to say, hey, mom's having a real bad day today and I'm just going to need some alone time, or I need to take a walk, or whatever it is, visit a friend that you need to do. Those are ways to model healthy coping behaviors. Well, a lot more to talk about with Becky Keefe, author of No Better Mom for the Job, Parenting with Confidence, Even When You Don't Feel Cut Out for It. We'll be right back.
People have value, but just where does it come from?
God created us in His image, as male and female.
But the enemy is deceiving so many.
We like to shake our fist at God and say, why did you make me this way? I don't like it. I'm going to define who I am for myself.
We must stand on God's truth.
Can we change God's words? Can we change the tense? It's just the tense of the verb. Come on. To be able to get along with everybody, we don't have the luxury to edit what God has said.
In His Image is a life-changing film that takes you through Scripture and shares powerful testimonies to destroy Satan's attempts to pervert God's perfect design.
There's only one last major holdout in society to shed light on what the truth is, and that is the church.
Watch it again or for the first time. Get the 2-DVD set at resources.afa.net. resources.afa.net.
Oh, sing hallelujah.
just playing all my favorite songs today. I love this song, and we can find hope eternal even when some days it feels hopeless, whether that's a simple thing like just having an egg mess under your dining room table, or that's more serious problems that we face as moms and as parents. Becky Keefe is here with a message that there is no better mom for the job. And if you're a mom out there who just feels like you are in a season of struggle and you're on the struggle bus and you just feel like you're looking for any little glimmer of hope, any little bit of victory, we have a message for you today. You can parent with confidence even when you don't feel cut out for it. And before the break, Becky and I were talking just about our emotions and how we are created as emotional beings. And I think, Becky, you know, I talk in my book about how Jesus experienced a lot of emotions. He was hungry. He was sad. He was angry. You know, he was lonely. He wanted companionship. And so emotions in and of themselves are not bad and are not sins. And I think we need to be transparent with our kids about our emotions and be transparent about our coping mechanisms. And you go through some of those in the book, talking about finding a friend who's going to love you even in that difficult place. Sometimes we want to make things perfect before a friend comes over. But sometimes what we need is a friend to come over and see our pile of laundry and our dirty dishes everywhere and, you know, our struggle that we're having, and to love us in that moment. Or whether that's reading scripture or calling your mom or taking a walk or taking deep breaths or having prayer, modeling those healthy coping mechanisms is really important. And you've just already shared on the program, Becky, and in your book and with your audience, you share about having mental health struggles and how sometimes we want to hide those from our kids too. But our kids know so much more than we think they do. So what has your experience been like that and sharing that with your kids, especially as they've gotten older?
Yeah, so I do. I struggle with generalized anxiety disorder. And I think you're exactly right. Our tendency, I think at least in Western culture, is to hide our weaknesses from our kids. We fear that, you know, we don't want them to worry about us, or we don't want them to, you know, have extra burdens on their plate. But what I have found is by being open about my struggles, and of course, like in age appropriate ways, but I have really seen it build compassion into my kids. I can remember a time, and for me, my anxiety kind of ebbs and flows. And in certain seasons, like right now, like I'm doing really well. And there's other times where it's really heavy and impacts a lot of my daily life. And when I was in one of those seasons, and I just was sitting at the table, after a meal, and the tears just wouldn't stop flowing. And, you know, having my kids, because like you said, they're in tune. They're like, what's wrong? And being, even though it feels uncomfortable, being willing to articulate and let them in and say, you know what? My anxiety is really high right now. I honestly don't fully know why I'm crying. My body, my mind just feel really overloaded. And sometimes that comes out through tears. And each one of my boys, in their own way, one went to the bathroom and grabbed a box of tissue and brought it to me. Another came and gave me like a hug around the neck. And my little one came and said, Mommy, it's okay if you're sad. I'll just be sad with you. Like, just the beauty of that compassion. And I hope that they never struggle with anxiety or depression the same way that I do. But one, if they do, I believe that by seeing me go through it, they will feel better equipped to do it. And two, mental health struggles are so prevalent that I guarantee that there will be someone in their life, whether it's a future spouse or friend or coworker or roommate, someone will struggle. And I want them to be the kind of kids who say, I see you. It's okay. I'll just be right here with you. And I feel like by taking our struggles out of the darkness of isolation and bringing them into the light of shared experience, even with our children, is such a powerful and beautiful gift that we can give them.
That is so true. And one of the things that the messages that you give is that a key to parenting with what you call God confidence, because we don't have enough confidence in ourselves, Becky. I mean, we just cannot do this on our own, is to become a student of your child and yourself. And you go through this list of questions that helps you develop a student mindset, thinking about, okay, what energizes you as a parent? What makes you feel depleted as a parent? What fills you with joy? What situations trigger stress? What environments do you feel most comfortable in? What places or activities cause you to feel distracted or irritable or overwhelmed? What activities or people bring out the best or the worst in you? What situations draw you and your child closer together? And what situations create tension and distance or discord between you and your child? Becky, I think this is one of the most important lessons that I have learned as a parent, is to set myself up for success. So knowing that if I have to do something that is going to make me feel really depleted, then what am I going to do to counterbalance that and make myself feel energized? Like, if I know that I'm going to drag my family to this event and they're really not going to have a good time, like, we're just asking for conflict and thinking, what places, where am I going to be triggered? And how can I think through in advance of that? And so what has been your experience in having a student mindset and learning those cues that your body are telling you? Because a lot of times our body is giving us cues of an imminent meltdown. So if you're feeling like, you know, you start to feel a little bit irritable, you start to feel like you're snappy a little bit, or you're just, you know, not yourself, your body is saying, hey, pull over, engine light, check engine light is on. But a lot of times we just ignore those things, or we self-medicate with caffeine or with scrolling mm-hmm. through our phone or with other things that numb us, until all of a sudden we just have this massive meltdown that we probably could have prevented. So what have you learned about that?
Okay, well, I want to tell you first what I think you can do to prevent it from even happening, and then I'll give you some just simple tips to do if you feel like you're on the brink. So part for me of learning to have that student mindset about myself and my kids is identifying, like, you know what, that party, that family gathering, that school event, that is going to be a blessing to all these kinds of families, but actually it's not going to be a blessing to us. And therefore we are not obligated to go. So for example, like if my kids get invited to a birthday party at like one of those like trampoline parks or, you know, like bounce house places, those are like not good for me. Like the constant noise and like the stuffy atmosphere and like the chaos of all the kids running around. And like, it is just not my jam. I do not feel like I'm a good parent in that situation. And so I can either be like, hey, ask a friend, hey, do you mind taking, you know, my kids, you guys are already going to the party, can they get a ride with you? And I'll just bow out, you know? Or being like, hey, like, yes, like there's this thing and it's going from 6 to 10, but hey, we're going to show up from, you know, 7 to 9. We're going to shorten the duration that we're there because that's going to be better for us. Or looking for things, if you have a really shy kid. And so being in a really, you know, chaotic environment or big crowds doesn't work for them. Well, instead of just being like, well, I guess we can't do anything. No, like find a way to cultivate, maybe, you know, schedule like a one-on-one hangout time for them and a friend. Or I found like, I love being outside. And so I may not be the kid or the parent that's going to, you know, take my kid to an amusement park, but hey, we're going to go hiking, or we're going to spend the day out as a family frisbee golfing, or just something. Like, it's about finding things that are really going to cultivate joy and minimize unnecessary stress. There's enough necessary stress in this world and in our parenting. Like, there's going to be plenty of ways that we are going to be stretched and challenged. But if you have the ability to set some boundaries and to learn yourself and your kids and be like, hey, every time we do that, things don't go well. Well, maybe stop doing that. Fill in the blank for you. And I guarantee your parenting will start to feel smoother and there'll be more peace and joy in your relationship with your kids.
One of the things, the quotes I highlighted in your book says, PSA of the day, Your boundaries will be different from your best friends and your neighbors and those of the mom you always stand next to at the school pickup. Don't compare your list of parameters to someone else's. All the Susie Facebooks may love taking their kids to the beach every summer day, but if you have an aversion to sand and crowds and rush hour traffic, it doesn't matter how lovely the cropped photos are of babies napping under a colorful umbrella, or toddlers collecting seashells, or teenagers playing frisbee with wind-tousled hair. You do you. If your kid is going to get fried in the sun or have a tantrum over getting tangled in seaweed or dash into the waves while you're nursing a baby, then the beach will create more needless stress than blissful summer memories. And as we're approaching summer, Becky, this is a big problem with moms. I know. And it doesn't matter if you have toddlers or teenagers. You get on your Instagram scroll or whatever social media you have, or you look at the families in your community and you see all of these perfect pictures of all of these perfect memories and you think, oh my goodness, I'm not doing that. Becky, we just need to say right now to all the moms listening, you do not have to perfectly curate your child's summer experience. It is perfectly okay to do what your family does best. And that's the beautiful thing about families, I think, Becky, is that every family is unique and every family is honestly wonderfully weird. So the things that I like to do that I'll give you an example. I really love 1940s movies, like old black and white movies. I love those. My girls will watch them with me. Their friends are like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Like, this is boring. I don't want to watch it, but it's our thing. And it's okay to have that and for us to be different and not fall prey to the pressure of feeling like we have to give our kids some curated experience. So what other words of advice do you have for that? What have you learned in that, Becky?
Oh, yes. I just offer a hearty amen. Like, yes. Like, let us like take off the shackles of comparison and celebrate one another. Like, if you see a mom or family doing something that is bringing them joy, like, applaud that, but don't take that on as a prescription for how you have to live your own life. So that line you read from my book, that is exactly how I felt about the beach. Like, I liked the beach as a teenager myself, like when I could just like lay in the sun. But when I had these like rambunctious young kids who had like zero fear of the ocean, but could not swim, like it was a stress fest. So I'm like, no, thank you. But I have friends who like that is like their sweet spot. But then when they see pictures of my family, you know, on Instagram and, you know, and we're hiking and we're camping and they're like, oh my gosh, like that looks amazing. I could never do that because I don't like the outdoors. You know, I don't like bugs. I don't like trees. You know, I just want to tell them like, this is what brings us joy. This is like what fits our family DNA. But like, don't take any pressure on yourself to have to make memories the way that we do. And so I think, again, it's just, it's commonly said, you know, comparison is the thief of joy, and it really, really is. And so I think just having that awareness as we head into summer, like when those thoughts bubble up, you know, when those feelings of like, I should be doing this. No, don't should on yourself. That's what my therapist told me. Don't should on yourself. Like, think, do I want to do that? Is it something that my family would enjoy? Would that bring us closer together? Or would that just, you know, cause a whole bunch of division? Like, if I try to get my boys, my teenage boys, to sit down and watch 1940s movies with me, they would be like,
no way.
No way. Honestly, I don't want to do that. But I love playing card games. And I like being competitive with my team. Like, it's so much fun. But someone else is like, oh my gosh, I have a friend who, like, card games or any games like stress her out. She's like, I can't think that fast. It's too much math, you know? And so I'm like,
well, that's where we can agree. You know? That's where we can agree, Becky, because let me tell you, I play a mean game of gin rummy. I can play that. I play that with my mother-in-law and my daughters, and it's such a great intergenerational activity that we can do together. And they love it, and it's great. And so every family needs to do what is best for their family. Well, Becky, as we end our time together, one of the messages in your book that resonated with me a lot is choosing gratitude. And at the end of every chapter, you give one simple step that you can choose to practice today and one powerful prayer. And we know the impact of gratitude. And so if you're in that season of struggle, we've talked about this a lot. I have a nurse practitioner friend who calls this vitamin G because of the health benefits that gratitude brings and how it transforms our hearts and our emotions. And really think about making a list of what you're grateful for. And if you are, if you know a mom, if you're a husband, if you're a grandparent, if you're a friend, a sister, a human being who knows a mom, listen, text that mom today or call them and say, hey, you're doing a great job. There is no better mom for the job. And you can get your copy of No Better Mom for the Job, Parenting with Confidence, Even When You Don't Feel Cut Out for It, by Becky Keith. Becky, thank you so much for joining us. And to my listeners, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you and give you peace. And we'll see you here right next time, prescribing hope for healthy families.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.